Welcome to You Don't Know Lit. I'm Nick Argyris, and welcome to our very first cop-out episode. To help me are my friends, Ian and Joe, two high school English teachers.
I'm Joe Holshue. I'm a high school English teacher, and Nick, for our very first cop-out episode, I think you should read A Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula K. Le Guin.
I'm Dr. Ian DeYoung. I'm a high school English teacher, and Nick, for our very first cop-out episode, I think you should read A Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Wow, I've never heard of that one.
May your earlobes turn into assholes and shit on your shoulders.
Hey, the plot doesn't fucking matter at all. This is what I think it's about.
If you look closely enough, every author was at some point a racist.
Audiobooks don't count, right?
All art is quite useless.
Who told you that?
Fun fact, that is how Joe laughs.
How do you guys define a cop-out episode? Because I know my definition.
Okay.
Can I share it with you?
Please.
On this audio platform?
Yep.
Okay, yes. So basically any podcast that has either A, a live episode, or B, a expedited short episode. And they just do
like
these
bonus,
because...
Like a bonus episode.
Yeah, like a bonus episode, just to buy them a little bit more time. For the busy podcasters out there.
Nick, would you say that we are absolutely swamped by our legions of fans and our grueling live tour schedule?
I always think so. I think I can speak for Ian here, too.
Please do. I love it when you do.
I love teaching. Like, I genuinely love my job. I love going into school every day. I love getting new classes. I love my job. But one of the problems with teaching is...
Are you still speaking for Ian?
I don't know. Ian, am I speaking for you?
So far, yeah. Yes. But you're on notice.
One of the problems with teaching is that no matter how much you like teaching, it will never be as good as summer. So it, like, in comparison, even though I love my job, it's kind of the second best part of my year.
So, right? So in recap, nothing is as good as teaching except not teaching.
Yeah. Like nothing is as good as teaching except summer, which is way better.
Yeah, I guess I can't subscribe to all of that. Well, this is the thing. Like, teaching is a tough job, but the bonus of having a built-in, and you don't always get vacation. Like, you have to work some during the summer, but that's pretty great to have a summer vacation and winter vacation too.
So I'm really excited to introduce cop-out episodes to this program. We made it all of 2 months before we completely gave up and did a short episode. So congratulations, guys.
It's expanding the universe. Do you guys want to hear a little piece of art that I made?
Yeah. Yes.
I got some art for you.
Do I want to hear the art?
It's audio art.
One of my favorite things about our recording is when you guys bring surprises to the table like this. So I'm nervous right now.
This is going to shatter you to your very core. Okay. So pay attention and don't interrupt. As with all art, this begins with me telling you how to consume it. And Nick, I am going to need a funky beat behind this.
Okay. Like that?
My name is Ian, and I'm here to say, God, I brought the best book you'll read all day. It's A Wizard of Earthsea, but about a boy named Ged. He's a powerful wizard, but that goes to his head. Ged goes off to school where he makes a mistake and spends his day running, trying to shake off the shadow that chases him down, scares him, attacks him, makes him frown. He gets good advice. He turns to face the shadow that's chasing him. Now it's a race to track down his enemy, put it to shame, save the whole world, make himself a name. That's the book that I brought. It's worth your time. And to prove it is, I've written this rhyme.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Ian, I don't like how you keep raising the bar for what you and I are expected to bring to the table.
Is that what that was?
Ian, Nick, Ian and I have prepared some things that you are going to like about this book.
Do you guys want to start with your 30-second plot? Should you both do 15 seconds?
Tell me when the clock starts.
All right, go.
A young man discovers he has powerful magical abilities and goes to wizard school to hone those abilities. While at wizard school, he accidentally releases a creature of darkness, and it is his duty to chase it down and fight it. He also fights dragons.
Joe, take the last 15. 10.
Yeah, absolutely. While seeking out this darkness and while fighting those dragons, Ged discovers not just a ton about the world that he lives in, but a ton about himself. And his ultimate battle is really something not... Oh, there's no way that was 15. No way.
The time doesn't stop for you to wait to jump in. The time is the time.
All right, Nick, we have some things about this book that you are going to like.
Tell me about it. I'm excited to hear about book today. I can really focus.
Nick, one thing I think you'll like about this book is that it has a talking dragon in it.
Sweet.
Not only is there a talking dragon, but our main character has to deal with this talking dragon and its 8 children. And so it's kind of like a fight, but it's not just a fight. There's also a challenge.
The dragon has 8 children?
Yep.
Yes.
And there's this challenge of wits and skills and intellect. And I will say this, I think this is kind of a necessary spoiler to establish how cool this guy is. Mm-hmm. He does manage to take care of all 8. He's just sitting in this boat.
Oh, he's a good dad?
What?
He's a good dad? We should have brought this for Father's Day.
I don't know if the dragon's male or female.
Or gendered. Maybe they just don't have genders.
Okay, fun fact. Nick, something else that you'll like about this book is in that dragon battle, one of the ways that Ged, our main character, vanquishes a dragon is he turns into a dragon himself and fights him in midair.
Tell me about who's in this book. So we have a dragon, his 8 children or her 8 children. And
their 8 children.
What's the premise of this book?
Well, I wrapped it. It's all in the wrap. You got to listen to the wrap more carefully.
So the premise of this book, Nick, is that Ged, our main character, Sparrowhawk, he's born in a small village and he is by birth preternaturally powerful. Like he has this wizard ability by birth and he outgrows his village. He goes to wizard school, becomes a pretty powerful wizard, makes a big mistake while there and spends the rest of the book trying to rectify that mistake and trying to heal this wound that was caused when he was at wizard school by his arrogance and hubris and all these things that are classic downfalls of characters.
He bumps into a lot of different people over the course of the book. One of them who's important to him is this kindly, very patient, very wise wizard named Ogeon. And Ogeon is one of the really good characters in this book. And so that's another reason I think you would like this book is this dude is, he's not like, sometimes your mentor characters are secretly evil or have flaws or whatever. This is a classic mentor character, but he's just good. He's good at his job. He's a really good wizard. And he's like the kind of guy that I would learn from. He's a very sort of wholesome fella.
And Nick, when Ian talks about a very good wizard, I'm afraid that you're thinking of Gandalf or Albus Dumbledore here. Ogeon, the closest analogy we have is he's kind of a wandering monk of a wizard.
Yeah.
Like he's super in harmony with nature. When it rains, he gets wet. Like he's a very he's a very zen-like character. He's a very Taoist character.
Yeah, and he's really invested in the sort of the ethics of power. He's not. So this is something that fantasy books don't do much, really reflect on. What does it mean that I'm giving my main character the power to change the world around them? And Ogeon is this guy who says, listen, more or less with great power comes great responsibility. You can't just go out there and just do all kinds of crazy magic stuff because that's
Spider-Man's job.
Yeah. Spider-Man does magic in the classic run of Spider-Man. Spider-Man meets Bilbo Baggins.
Mm-hmm. So we met the wizard. Who is the earth and who's the sea?
Good. Okay. So Nick, this book takes place in a water world.
Now you're going to hear water world and you're going to think about Kevin Klein. Is it on a water ski?
Kevin Sorbo.
Let me just stress. I cannot stress enough. How wrong that image is. And I might even take issue with Joe using the phrase water world.
After melting the polar ice caps, most of the globe is underwater. Some humans have survived and even fewer still, notably Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner.
has adapted to the ocean by developing gills.
Do they actually have gills in that movie?
Yeah, well, Kevin Costner does. The actor. I don't know if the character does.
They had to put makeup over Kevin Costner's personal gills.
Yeah, no, they didn't have to use makeup.
It's why he was the perfect fit
yeah,
for the role.
He was really born for the role.
The pinnacle of his career. So it's kind of the South Pacific where there's just a whole bunch of small islands.
Yes.
And people go back and forth between them, but each island kind of or areas have their own sort of unique cultures and art forms and stuff. That's a one analogy to this. So it's a book where people live on land, but it's like to get from one place to another, In this book, it's all about ships and boats and a lot of the best chase scenes and a lot of the best travel narrative happens on the sea.
And there's a lot of added tension from it being on the sea, right? Like, because the sea, of course, has this inherent danger to it. You can't go too far. You run out of food. Like, the storms come up.
There's
the
sharks.
Wind doesn't always cooperate. There's sharks. Yes.
You guys want to hear a one-star review for Waterworld?
so much.
Would you guys like a one-star review?
Yes.
Yeah.
This movie's way too long, doesn't make much sense, has stereotypical characters, and glorifies a sexist dirtbag as the protagonist. Acting wasn't great, and the only cool thing was all the jumping jet skis. I've always said Kevin Costner's a sexist dirtbag.
That could be a good minced oath.
What?
Jumping jet skis.
Jumping jet skis,
oh,
Batman.
Oh, sure. Good. Perfect. Nick, this book comes with a map. There is a map on the inside cover of this book.
Ooh. Now, I can't think of too many books with maps in them.
Every fantasy book ever, but yes, go on. I mean, this is honestly...
Okay, so besides those, not many, right?
I kid you not. There is literally no fantasy author in the world that has managed for their whole life to resist putting a map. Like, if you're a fantasy author, at some point you'll be like, ah, crap, I got to put a map in here. There's always a map.
Yeah.
So next week is Hemingway's birthday. So do you guys want to bring a Hemingway book? We haven't really done any Hemingway yet.
Nick, I think I'll bring The Sun Also Rises, which is Hemingway's first novel and includes a description of bullfighting.
And Nick, I'm going to bring a book that I think you have read. I know you have read. It's called The Old Man and the Sea, and it is it's a short book about fishing.
Ah, The White Whale. Perfect.
Oh, man. I really want to bring Moby Dick sometime, but I'm not brave enough yet.
What is just in a couple sentences, what's that book about?
Moby Dick?
Yeah.
Moby Dick is about one man's obsessive pursuit of the white whale that bit off his leg. It's a whaling novel from the 1850s, and it's probably the best piece of American literature ever.
Wow. That's a pitch.
I love it. I love that book so much. It's incredible.
It's also, if it's the best piece of American literature ever written, it is probably the least read best piece of American literature ever.
Absolutely.
I don't think I think I can count the people that I know who have read it on, for sure, on one hand.
I've got more. Hey, Nick, I've got more reasons why you'll like this book. Okay. Here's one. The scope of this book is not a cosmic scope. It is a personal scope. So it's not all about like saving the world and this huge invasion of aliens. It's like one guy dealing with his problems. And there is a sense like if the problem that he's kind of brought into being gets loose, it could be a danger to the world. But the book is primarily about this main character, Ged, getting peace and becoming more mature. It's very sort of focused on him.
What type of personal problems?
Well, fear of death. He is afraid of death.
It's a good one.
That's the big guy.
And he deals with it over the course of the book. And so there's like a psychological element as well as like your classic fantasy, like go chase down the monster type thing.
It's not a shallow adventure fantasy book is what you're saying.
And you kind of you start off maybe thinking it's going to be sort of like shallow, maybe conventional, certainly. And then you get to the end, you're like, oh, dang. Yeah, we did get to witness like this cool adventure, which doubled as Ged's journey inside of himself and learning who he was and how to kind of live with his mistakes and live with regret. And that's it's very redemptive, it's very transformational for him. It's uplifting, I would say.
A lot of times when we're introduced to a young wizard or a young hero, they need to become more powerful.
Yeah,
of course.
That's never the case with Ged.
That's like the solution, right? That's the solution to their problems. Their problems are you need to have more power. You need to be able to do this spell or this skill.
That's exactly it. Ged is unnaturally powerful at the beginning of this book. He is absolutely blessed by whatever cosmic forces dictate power in this world. And even when he goes to wizard school, right away in his first months at school, he's learning things that take other people years to learn. So Ged is...
He's a regular Harry Potter. Power,
well, no. Well, but if... No not at all.
But kind of. He does wear round glasses, right?
Nope.
And he does have a lightning bolt scar.
That's weird.
He actually does have a large scar on his face.
It's really interesting that so like Harry Potter is kind of taken the place as the conventional fantasy wizard story. Le Guin says that she wrote this book to kind of work with these conventions, these traditional conventions, but also to push against them. So it's got a lot of these familiar elements. This is a quote from her. She says, the main character is a man who uses his strength, wits, and courage to rise from humble beginnings to great fame and power. So it's got these sort of conventional familiar elements, but it's also really sneaky in how it subverts them. So it takes this peaceful approach to problem solving. This problem is not the kind of thing that you solve with like big battles or even duels with Voldemort or whatever. It's not
Voldemort.
It's not sort of a aggressive problem solution. It's a voyage of self-discovery. And she also does this really cool thing where she centers brown people, not white people. So in a lot of, she says, a lot of fantasy fiction is kind of like drawn from this Northern European tradition where white people are the main characters and the bad guys are usually other and they're usually brown, scary, dark, gross. And there's kind of a racist element to this. And so what she did was very kind of, subtly, very sneakily, she made these characters brown people and the white people are gross and barbaric and scary. So she moves this kind of conventional story from Northern Europe, where a lot of fantasy is kind of imagined to be set, and sets it in the archipelago, which is not, it's not Northern Europe. It's not sort of your conventional, you know, Vikings and white skin.
When was this book written? Sorry if you said that already.
1968. Nope, 1968 this book is published.
And how many pages is it?
I read it on ebook. Ian?
My copy is 300 small pages. Most copies are kind of larger pages and shorter. It's not long.
Okay. First edition is 205.
No, it's not particularly long.
Yeah, right.
And Ursula K. Le Guin, she was expecting a little bit more blowback. This is 1968. This is a time of turmoil and racial conflict. JFK get assassinated, RFK gets assassinated, Martin Luther King. Am I getting these all right or
Martin
no?
Luther King,
like all of these assassinations are happening. And I think
68 he died.
Yeah, 68. And she said she expected more blowback from this, but it went pretty much unnoticed or at least uncommented on. And it is because it's so subtly done in this that she doesn't. I remember hearing an interview with the guys from The Adventure Zone, my brother and me, and they were talking about including trans characters in one of their story arcs. And they asked their audience, they said, hey, we want some of these characters to be trans. How do you want us to portray that? And their audience said back, we want it to not be a central plot point. Like, we want these trans characters to just do these cool things. And the fact that they're trans never has to come up except in subtext. And that's really what's going on throughout a ton of this book. The fact that Ged is brown is never commented upon really other than in passing.
There's a really interesting quote. She says, I had no power when the book was first published to combat the flat refusal of many cover departments in publishing houses to put people of color on a book jacket. So through many later lily white Geds, Ruth Robbins's painting for the first edition, the fine, strong profile of a young man with copper brown skin was, to me, the book's one true cover. Now, I bring this up because I think it's really interesting the way the book covers make us expect certain things. So my copy that I got from the library, because uncountably I don't own this book, is a recent reissue. It's published in 2012. And the cover of this is purple with gold writing. And there is a sparrowhawk in flight on the cover. There is no person. There's no dude. And my wife looked at this and she commented, that looks like they're trying to knock off Harry Potter, because the kind of the flowing script, the gold letters, it looks kind of Harry Potter-ish. But it's really interesting looking at this cover and then reading what Le Guin has to say about the covers of the first edition and how so many book departments don't put people of color on book jackets. And then I look at my book and yep, sure enough, it's a bird. It's a bird.
Yeah.
It's not a person. What does your cover look like, Joe?
So I have a digital version of the book, but I believe the cover is the exact same thing. And it almost does look, it reminds me of like Hedwig the Owl.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
what it almost seems Absolutely. Like. Yep. To get back to Ged and his story of growth here, one of the things that's interesting is, Nick, you play Dungeons & Dragons a little bit.
Every day.
Okay.
That's actually what you're going to go do after this, after we're done recording today.
I'm very
right?
busy, very busy.
Nick, I don't actually know if you know enough about D&D to know this, but...
Probably not.
How dare you.
Every class has its own, like, main skill, right? So if you're a rogue, for example, your main skill is going to be dexterity, possibly charisma, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you are a wizard, your main skill is intelligence. When we see wizards depicted in literature, a lot of times it's not actually their intelligence that gets them out of situations. It's not their intelligence that they draw power from. One of the things I thought was awesome about this book is when Ged is having his epic showdowns, when Ged is confronting these monsters, confronting these shadows, confronting these dragons, the way that he wins those battles, when he wins them, is through intelligence and wisdom. Yeah. And I think it's such a hard thing to portray in an exciting way in a book. But there were moments in this book where I had to set it down and tell my wife instantly what I just read.
Right.
Which she hates when I do, by the way. But I had to set it down and I would say, can I tell you about this scene? And she would say, do you have to? And I would say, yes.
That's why, see, Joe, just a little bit of marriage advice here. That's why my Ooh. Wife doesn't know that I am able to read. I've kept that a secret from her. We never have this
smart.
Issue.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Smart. I tell my wife I read 2 books a week.
it's that beautiful thing we've talked about a little bit on the podcast before where the narrative makes sense. It doesn't at all feel like it's a deus ex machina. But at the same time, it's completely surprising. So it's like, of course, he does this to beat the dragon. Of course he does this to escape the castle where he's being held prisoner. But
he gets into a lot of wacky hijinks is what you're saying.
He gets into a lot of scrapes. That's for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah.
Do you guys have any super like highbrow literary analysis you'd like to share with me?
I'll drop a word on you. Nick, I would say this book is a buildings roman. Nick, Ian, how did I pronounce that?
That was pretty good. Well done.
That was more pretentious than I was expecting.
Yeah. Oh, well, hey, you're
9 out of 10 for that pronunciation.
Literary. Yeah. So, Nick, this is a buildings roman. And what that means is we would call it a coming of age tale. When we meet Ged, he is young. He has this power within him, but what we see him develop throughout is we see him grow into his power. His power causes problems. Like his power and his youthful arrogance is what sets the events of this book in motion. So if his power causes these problems, it's him growing into his power and really seeking this wisdom. So the story of this book is really a story of Ged's character development. And the tension and the arc in this book is seeing Ged going from this young, powerful, but foolish wizard to an older, still incredibly powerful, but having mastered the knowing when to use that power.
How does this book do that in 200 pages?
That's a great question.
This book is efficient. And
oh my
I have
gosh,
a,
yes.
It's so efficient. There's these moments of world building in this book. And there are these moments of character building that are done very, very quickly, but they hint at what's beneath them, right? I'm just going to drop a few of these on you that I've noted. There's a time when he meets another wizard, an old friend of his. It's toward kind of in the third act of the book. He meets this old friend of wizard of his. And it's this kind of coincidental meeting. They don't seek each other out. But there's a moment when his old friend drops what we assume is a piece of worldly wisdom in which he says, wizards never meet by chance. And that's where he leaves it. Wizards never meet by chance. And it's dropped as this piece of wisdom and never commented upon after that, just accepted as a truth. But that hints at so much like deeper power in the book and this cosmic connection between these wizards and like, yeah. these ideas of fate, right?
Yeah. But so words matter and language is important. And the book kind of gives words and language this top tier weight. And so writing becomes and speech becomes particularly important in shaping the world around you. And this is, I think, symbolic of how powerful in our world writing and literature and poetry and even communication can be. So what Le Guin does is puts maybe one of her presuppositions that writing and words have power, and she puts that into the magical system of this world. And so as you read it, you're not just like, oh, cool, rad, he knows this thing's true name, so he's able to defeat it. But also you understand, like, knowing things about the world gives you power over the world. And this kind of is true of our world too. The people who are able to shape reality are the ones who control the narrative. You know, history is written by the victors. And if you know what to say, if you know how to frame something, you can frame it powerfully. And with the dragon fight, this is one of the most exciting.
Let's do it. All right, I'm ready.
One of the most exciting, uplifting parts of the book, because Ged is young. He is like not, I think he's 18 or 19 at this point.
He's fresh out of wizard school.
Yeah. This is like his first assignment. He's like not sure what he can do, because you can't just like shoot them with magic guns and they're dead. Like these are big beasts and extremely powerful and so on. And he goes out there and, armed with the force of his education and his wit and his knowledge, he manages to kill four or five of the baby dragons.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, and no, that's sad. Yes.
Well, they're not babies, they're gonna murder him. Yeah. Like, again, it comes back to this idea of Ged is powerful because he has studied. Ged is powerful because he has learned about the world. And the connection between the learning and your power as a wizard is a one-to-one connection in this book. And Le Guin does such an awesome job of portraying that.
Hey, I'm confused. Is this a single book or a series?
Yeah. So that's another thing that I was going to recommend about it. It is complete in itself. So there is what Le Guin calls an Earthsea cycle, which are a bunch of books which are set in this archipelago. But this book sits by itself. This book is not setting up a sequel. It doesn't end on a cliffhanger. Like, Nick, you could read this book and then never read another Le Guin book and you would still be satisfied. This is not a book that tries to be a franchise.
Can you say that about Dune?
No, because Dune, the first one went so well that what's his name, like, kept making more when he should have stopped.
Yeah.
Le Guin, like, she's really good at this. She doesn't like milk her big hits for sort of the media franchise. One of my favorite Le Guin books is a book called The Left Hand of Darkness, which is just super weird and freaky. I could read so many stories set in that universe about those characters, but no, she did that one, and that's kind of it.
I remember when I read it when I was a kid, I was always so taken. And I think one of the things that's thrilling about young wizard books is when we see this, we see the potential in these young wizards, like this perceived or this promised power. And when you're a young kid, you identify with that. There's a moment when Ged looks down at his arms and rages at their weakness because he knows his strength. And when I read that, I remember thinking, that is what it feels like to be a kid. Like, that is what it feels like to be a young teenager, is you have this potential, you know you can do these awesome things, but you just haven't had the chance, or you're not there yet. And seeing Ged grow into his power is so satisfying in this book as an adult, right? And especially the fact that his power doesn't come from the fact that he's a dope wizard, right? Like, his power comes from the fact that he, like, sits down, does the work, studies, and, like, outsmarts the people around him. It spoke to me it made my chest well up, right? Like, it made my chest swell.
Yeah, you should get that checked out.
Good joke.
Thank you, Joe.
Yep.
All right. Closing arguments. Why should I read this book?
You know, one of the through lines of our discussions through all these episodes has been, what does it mean to be literature? When does a book stop being a book and start being a piece of literature? And the thing I keep coming back to, when you reread this, when you revisit this 5 years later, 10 years later, in my case, when I revisit this 25 years later,
right,
you get something new out of it at this point, and it teaches you something else. And that it absolutely holds up in that regard. And it's why, Nick, I would recommend it as well.
There are these flashy moments kind of throughout where, you know, various things, you know, dragon fights and so on. And those are fine. But I really, really like this. There is a moment where he is kind of confronted with this choice. He has a opportunity to do something which is kind of morally questionable, but gain a lot of knowledge. And this sorceress is tempting him. And she says, only dark can conquer dark. And then he stands up and he realizes it is light that defeats the dark. And then he sees how close he was to falling into sort of a slavery to this evil power. And he reflects on the fact that he doesn't. And he says, even as the shadow had not been quite able to catch up with him and seize him, so the stone, this evil power, had not been able to use him, not quite. He had almost yielded, but not quite. He had not consented. It is very hard for evil to take hold of the unconsenting soul. And like, that's one of these little pithy aphorisms, which I've thought about that ever since I reread this book. It's very hard for evil to take hold of the unconsenting soul. And the idea that like, when people do bad stuff, a small part of them wants it. A small part of them consents to it. And fighting against our own kind of desires to do bad stuff, to be selfish, to be greedy. It's constant. It's a constant struggle. And if we let down our guard and like, I'll just go ahead and, you know, I'll, whatever it is, I'll do the bad thing. I'll pay attention to my own needs as opposed to the needs of people who rely on me. I'll put myself first. I'll ignore the potential pain I might cause. You just open that door a crack and evil takes hold of the unconsenting soul. So that whole passage is my that section is my favorite, but that passage is particularly excellent. Hey, Nick, who won this week?
Yeah, who won?
I can tell you who lost.
obviously you won because now you have a great recommendation for a book. And obviously our listeners won because they're going to rush out and our legions of litheads are going to rush out and buy this book and read it cover to cover.
We're all winners.
Yeah. A Camp Luther tie.
Can I read a quote? Or Joe, do you have a really good quote?
I think the winner should get to read the quote.
Okay. Who wins?
Joe, why don't you read a quote for us?
There's a moment in this book in which Ged is trying to explain how magic works and where a wizard gets his power. And he says, it's no secret. All power is one in source and end, I think. Years and distances, stars and candles, water and wind and wizardry, the craft in a man's hand and the wisdom in a tree's root, they all rise together. My name and yours and the true name of the sun or a spring of water or an unborn child are all syllables in the great word that is very slowly being spoken by the shining of the stars. There's no other power, no other name.
What name?
It doesn't say.
Slim Shady.